Tom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Good Friday. It is Dom time. Momentarily, we'll talk with Senator Dave McCormick here on Talk Radio 1210. A lot to catch up on. This is the Senate race, of course, that could determine. There's two or three of them, but this is a major one. Who could determine who runs the Senate? And you can see not having the Senate, even if you have the House, and sometimes even if you have the presidency, how they can slow things down, how big of a deal it is. And then there's the fact that Pennsylvania should be one of the top three or four senators that we know of. How many people would ever know Bob Casey Jr.? All right. He's effective because he doesn't have to be now. Now, he's been coasting on Scranton, the family name, forever. The magic of hearing that name. And you kind of think by now, maybe this time around, a lot of the people who remember fondly the father are no longer there. I mean, how long? It seems like 100 years ago. I remember when the father, Dan, was running against another junior, Bill Scranton Jr. Bill Scranton was a big-time Republican, could have been a VP choice, was governor. The son went with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and they had him playing a flute and sitting in the middle of the room with the long hair. When Casey dropped that ad, Senior Casey, on him, that was it for that wannabe Scranton. Yeah. So this junior, we'll see. Let's go to Dave McCormick on Talk Radio 1210. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon, Dom. How are you?
Good, good. So there's a lot of policy developments, but there's something I saw on your Twitter that really we have to talk about, particularly given the run that Casey Jr. has gotten. I mean, I admired the father a lot as a Democrat, had him on several times, that the New York Times apparently has this all-out effort to besmirch either your childhood or your parents or something like that. Digging into that, my God.
Yeah, no, this was this shocked me even for the New York Times. And what happened here is, I think the opposition, I think the Casey team and the Democrats are getting worried that this is going to be a heck of a challenge for Senator Casey. And so they give the opposition research to the New York Times. And the New York Times is an extension of the Democratic machine. But essentially, I've said it a number of spots along the way.
And what are you told they're trying to do here?
Well, they were just essentially trying to say that because I was calling my mom and dad teachers, I wasn't acknowledging the fact that my dad was a very powerful political force because he ended up being a college president in where I grew up, and a political enemy. And the irony of the New York Times trying to say that a career educator, a college president, that was the, that was my political support, when Bob Casey's entire career has been defined by being the son of Bob Casey Sr. And this is just the craziness. So they were trying to make a story out of nothing, but more important, it shows that the Democrats will do anything they possibly can to try to tear me down because they see an opponent that can take on Bob Casey, who has really been a very, very weak senator for 18 years. But Dom, the most important point I want to make, and I try to make this on the campaign trail, don't think because he's been weak and hasn't been a leader that he hasn't been dangerous. He's voted 98% of the time with Joe Biden. So when you look at the war on fossil fuels, when you look at what's happened with inflation, when you look at the wide open border and Bob Casey's support for sanctuary cities, he's been at the scene of the crime every single time.
Heck, not even at the scene of the crime. He had Biden's ear on shrinkflation. He's the architect now, and Snickers bars. He got a shout-out in the State of the Union about I saw him do it right in front of me, Dave. I do a show with Channel 6, and he was the newsmaker. And I'm staying there, oh, my goodness. He's the architect of shrinkflation. And then President Biden says, vote for Bobby Casey's bill. He's the guy.
I'll make 2 points on that. Number one, it's like, when you come out of the subway sometimes or out of the train station in Philadelphia, you'll see the guy sitting out there with the three walnuts moving the pea.
Yeah.
And the bottom line here is that inflation's the result of the excessive spending of Bob Casey and Joe Biden. Bob Casey's voted every step of the way, and the war on energy, which has driven up fuel prices, which is a big driver of inflation. And this idea that the real problem is shrinkflation just shows that they're trying to change the conversation as opposed to owning what's happened. And the most important thing that I hear every day, 60% of Pennsylvanians are living paycheck to paycheck. And when you have inflation prices that have gone up by 20% under Biden Casey and wages that have gone up by 14 or 15%, people are getting squeezed on food, on fuel, on rent. And that's why this Bidenomics is not working for most Pennsylvanians. And that's why they're trying so hard to change the conversation, because they're not owning what have been very bad policy choices for Pennsylvania.
Now, the other day, you got the endorsement of President Trump when he was here in Pennsylvania. So taking away at least an angle from the media to say Republicans are split and all that. And I think Trump went out of his way to say that the two of you, there's no hard, nothing from, I'm sure, you know, it's always hard when you do the endorsement the last time with Dr. Oz.
Yeah.
It would be for me, too, the same thing, but that Trump, yeah. Trump did not evade or do anything. He endorsed Dave McCormick, and he said how important this race was, not just your theme. It's not just about control of the Senate, but that Pennsylvania deserves someone like you who is in the forefront versus Casey, who has never been in the forefront of anything. It's just not his background. He's there because of his father.
Right. Well, listen, politics is a contact sport, you know, and so last election, 2022, you know, it was a tough to lose. And obviously, President Trump endorsed somebody else. But I think what he and I both agree on is that the country's in deep trouble. And we need new leadership in the Senate. This Senate seat couldn't be more important. And we need new leadership in the White House. And I had endorsed President Trump and said I would support our nominee, and I enthusiastically endorsed him. And he did the same for me. And honestly, I think his campaign and his ability to get out the vote will help me. And I believe that my campaign and my ability to appeal across Pennsylvania will help him. And we're very aligned in trying to get America moving in the right direction. And so I was honored to get his endorsement and the endorsement of many people across Pennsylvania. The thing that I try to say, Dom, is we've got to unify our party. And so I'm very proud of the fact that I have Scott Perry, who's the former chairman of the Freedom Caucus, and Brian Fitzpatrick, who's the co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus. And I say to both of them, listen, you're only going to agree with 80% of what I say, probably even a different 80%. But the thing we agree on is that the country's in deep trouble, and we disagree with the crazy progressive left that's taken us over the cliff 90% of the time. And so we got to get leadership in place we can get behind, and that's what I think is coming together in Pennsylvania. It's very exciting and encouraging to see the unity that we have in our party, both nationally and here in Pennsylvania. I think it's going to make the difference in November.
One other area, too. Mayorkas, shamefully this week, the Senate won't even take it up and go to a trial, saying, well, what is he doing? What he's doing is we clearly know he has the ability to sit there and just say repeatedly, he's good at it. I don't know how anyone can program themselves to say the border is fine. We're doing all that we can. And Bob Casey voted to table that, not to delve into this, even when on paper, at least, I still think it's inflation in the end, but illegal immigration across Pennsylvania is arguably the number one emotional issue in a lot of ways. It's just connecting the dots, since the media won't help us, Dave, that Casey enabling this continued illegal immigration.
100%. If you and I had sat in a room on the day Joe Biden came into office and said, how bad could it get? We would have never imagined the border could get this bad. It's chaotic, 10 million illegal migrants, 160 people apprehended on the terrorist watch list. The fentanyl crisis is spinning out of control. 4,000 Pennsylvanians died last year. And Bob Casey has owned this terrible set of policies. He's voted for sanctuary cities. He's voted against funding for the border patrol. He's voted against the wall, and here most recently, as you said, he's voted not to hold Mayorkas accountable for downright lying about the state of our border to Congress and the terrible incompetent handling of his responsibility. So I'm gonna keep hammering this. Bob Casey is absolutely complicit in the terrible crisis we have at the border, and this is one of the things where it's very much in the hands of the president. There's a lot more he could be doing with his executive powers to stop this, and he's not doing it. And the reason is very clear. It's highly political. I'm sure you know this, Dom, but just for your listeners, the recent census, Senator Bob Casey and others voted to ensure that these illegal migrants can be counted in the census. The reason that's so important is the census determines how many congressional seats each state gets. It also determines the electoral votes in the Electoral College. So this is a way to influence and essentially steal elections right in front of you by having illegal migrants determine the number of electoral votes that places like New York and California can have. So this is a very big deal. The consequences couldn't be bigger, and Bob Casey's on the wrong side of this for America and for Pennsylvania.
I'm in the camp. You just said what I would be talking about. I realize how important inflation is, but what you just said, people say all the time in Pennsylvania, well, why are they doing it? That's one of the reasons why right there. Dave, so where do we go to help and see all things Dave McCormick?
DaveMcCormickPA.com. And listen, I'm going to be all over the Commonwealth in my bus. I'm right now headed from Juniata to Harrisburg as we speak. And I'm going to be all over the Commonwealth in the coming months. I think since January 1st, I've done 49 or 50 counties, 140 stops or so. And so I'll be in your neighborhood, the bottom line, and I'm excited about what lies ahead.
Well, pull in here to 2400 Market Street. How many Cokes have you had today?
Well, counting them up, I think four or five. You know
oh,
what?
My we're sitting at a wait a minute. What the heck?
We're sitting at a sheet, and you know, if you get one of those big boys out of the dispenser, yeah. I mean, that may count as two. But it's part of keeping me ready to go.
All right.
Ready for war.
All righty. Thank you, Dave. Have
Thanks,
a nice weekend. Thank you for joining us.
Good to talk to you, too. Bye-bye.
I hate to rain on that, Dan, but I thought he was raining that in there. Four or five Cokes already. It's only 1:30.
And they're Diet Cokes, too. Doesn't he share that with Trump, that they're both Diet Cokes?
I'm not sure if they're Diet or not. He didn't say that. No. The New York Times, get over
there. Last time we asked him whether or not there was some kind of ether in the Diet Coke that does good politics. You remember?
Yeah, that's right. That's a little bit too much. My God, we need another drink of choice there. All right, 855-839. Imagine, well, they were teachers, which they were. Oh, my God. They were powerful. They advanced him. Not like Bob Casey, who advanced himself. No, not really. All right, side question today. Tomorrow, 420, hit us with somebody, a film, a person associated with marijuana. Oh, wait a minute here. Dan, you're reporting. Let's hear your news sounder here.
Oh, yeah. Let me get that ready for this.
Yeah.
It's worthy of it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was... Hold on.
Well, we'll see if it is. Wait, maybe not. So I'll just... Yeah. this is Associated Press reporting it?
Keeley has it on Twitter.
Steve Keeley reporting Rabbi Newlander has died.
Fred Newlander.
Now, was he in jail at this point? So I even... Forget
yeah, he was in prison, still in prison.
Okay.
He was convicted of paying those killers to murder his wife. He was indeed convicted of that and still serving time and has perished in prison at the age of 82.
Ah, boy. So, yeah, it is a while ago. Do you remember Rabbi Newlander?
Me? What?
No, I'm saying...
Well, I was going to say, I remember Newlander because, believe it or not, I grew up in the neighborhood that was abutted to Rabbi's house. And when this all went down, there was actually... I mean, I was young, but I still remember the security that went into and people were concerned and thinking that how can a guy that was a leader of his community do something like this to his wife? And it was a fascinating and scary story.
Yeah, very rare. And it gives me the hook to announce on this day the Rabbi Newlander passes. Fellow felon, and I guess I'd say, well, I'm not sure if he was convicted of murder or paying for murder. Let's just say fellow felon. Mumia Abu-Jamal turns 70 today. From his People Who Monitor, Dear Dom, while we're certainly excited to celebrate Mumia's 70th year of life, we're aware what it does to you to be incarcerated for more than 40 years. Well, you know, oh, it's April 24th. I'm sorry, a little bit ahead of myself, but there will be a rally at the Cato statue for Mumia on the 24th. So Wednesday, the great man turns 70, and they're saying, well, you know, how much, 40 years of incarceration? Yeah, how old would Danny Faulkner have been at this point? One of my favorite guests. I mean, I defy you, anybody you want to have a beer with, a brawl, and an intellectual debate with, Bill Donahue.
Oh, yeah.
Listener of ours just sent it to me, issued a directive from the report on the Richmond FBI. And the report from the inspector general seems to say, well, they weren't really targeting Catholics. I don't know about you, but it incenses me every time I see the hair guy, the head of the FBI. Well, we can't release who those people are. They can't be put under testimony. That's all an internal matter. You know, I know people say, I want to get to the bottom of who is it that leaked the Alito decision? Why can't we know the cocaine in the White House? The one that really gets to me is this Richmond office to drag these people in. Who is it that gave the order? Why were you surveilling, license plating Catholics who you may not like it, but I think are, you want to think they're hyper religious, but maybe they're just good practicing Catholics, not Pope Francis Catholics, and they want a Latin Mass. So we're going to go down this path. It just bugs me. It's in my top 10 to bring them in. Let's put them under oath. So Donahue, yeah, Dan, if you can get them on for a couple of minutes at 2 o'clock, calling upon Jim Jordan with a ton of questions on this to say, well, how can Catholics have any faith in the FBI? How's anybody have any faith in them, given what we see going on? And I told myself I would not do it. I wouldn't torture me, Dan, and everybody else, but I'm going to. A statement from the two heads of Defending Borders, Defending Democracies Act. That would be Jared Golden, who's a Democrat, bipartisan, and of course, our guy, Brian Fitzpatrick, saying, isn't it wonderful, essentially, that we're going to vote tomorrow to stop the nonsense at our border and to protect democracy, meaning the $660 billion for Ukraine? Oh, my God. Tomorrow's, you know, Sixers better win. I'll be watching that because around that time tomorrow, we're going to hear them say, well, we're strengthening democracies in Ukraine and we voted to protect our own border. Well, we know, you know, the Senate is not going to vote for that border bill. So then why are we giving up the $660 billion? Now, this is what Mike Johnson, who says he's a wartime consigliere or Speaker of the House. He's in a wartime here. History is calling him. You know, he hasn't said it yet. I'm going to go there, Dan, because it's a day, Friday, all the family business. Has Mike Johnson said the ultimate thing to protect him? God is telling him to do it. You know, he's made statements like that before, and I don't want to tread on those sincerely, but if he says that about this, then, you know, it is time for somebody to say, that doesn't protect you. Let's take that out. You're not telling me God told you to send $660 billion to Ukraine. This is ridiculous. How many defenses do you have for something that you can't defend? Watch for that. I mean, what else is there to say that he hasn't brought up now just in the last week to defend this action, which is a betrayal? This phony border bill that Brian Fitzpatrick's talking about, A, I don't know that it would stop anything at the border because Biden won't enforce it. But B, the Senate is never going to pass it. That's what the game is. You had something.
So I have both Speaker Johnson, who was accosted in the hallway. He says, I'm going to do my job. I'm not deterred by threats. But I also have the short press conference of him laying forth his stance, if you want to hear that, too.
Yeah, let's hear his stance a little bit.
A process to break the bills into four separate measures for consideration, and that is what we will have tomorrow. Everyone can vote their will and their constituents' desires on the Israel aid, the Ukrainian aid, the Indo-Pacific, and then our fourth national security package that has all of our innovations in it. Because we did this process, we got a better outcome here. We have a lot of innovations that the Senate did not consider. We include the Repo Act, which, as you know, is the use of corrupt Russian oligarchs' assets to help fund the resistance in Ukraine. We introduced the loan concept for the governmental assistance.
Oh, wait, stop it right there. Oh, the loan concept. Again, the lying. Come on now, buddy. Come on. I do think he's a man of faith. How do you turn these things off? That's a flat-out lie. Tell them, Mike, that in there, the president, whoever the president is, post the election. Why not right now have the ability to forgive it? Why has it got to be post the election? Because we know the Heat can forgive 50% of the loan, and by 2026, they can forgive it all. It's a lie. The Ukrainians are not going to pay us back anything. Why put that in? Why lie? Why not just say, I'm doing it because I'm called to do it? Would that stop us? I can only speak for myself. I don't care if he does say, praying he's going to do it. I don't care. I don't care anymore. He may believe that in his heart. I don't care. I'm not getting a message from God. I'm looking at the constituency of the Republican Party. This is a lie. It's a betrayal. A little bit more, Dan.
The governmental assistance part, it'll be provided in a loan instead of a gift. We also included some really important sanctions on Russia and China and Iran, which I believe is the new axis of evil, and many of us do, and they are the ones who are the aggressors in this situation. The reality here is that if the House did not do this better policy and process, allowing for amendments on the floor in the process tomorrow, we would have had to eat the Senate supplemental bill. And that is because we were very close, given the timeline in both Israel and Ukraine, to a discharge petition being brought. And a discharge petition, in layman's terms, is that when a number of members or a majority of members get together, they can override the speaker and bring something straight to the floor. That would have happened imminently on the Senate supplemental. So by doing this, even though it's not the perfect legislation, it's not the legislation that we would write if Republicans were in charge of both the House, the Senate, and the White House, this is the best possible product that we can get under these circumstances to take care of these really important obligations. And so we look forward to the vote tomorrow. We look forward to every member voting their conscience and their desire. And that is exactly how this process is supposed to work and how the House is supposed to operate. So we're happy to provide that.
Thank you, Dan, for that. So let's put this out there. Are you buying that? This is the best we could get, essentially, this suddenly discharge bill, this thrown in now. And if we didn't do this, what was going to happen would be a whole lot worse. How are they a majority then? It's another cover. It's another way of trying to deflect from the fact that Johnson sent the signal. That's what happened here. Johnson sent the signal. He's been sending it throughout this week. This is the way to go. And he's offering all kinds of arguments, including this Brian Fitzpatrick stuff, that indicate the Senate would dictate the power of the purse is with the House. I mean, it's very hard. It's like whack-a-mole trying to knock down everything this guy's throwing up. And when you throw up that many arguments like this, first of all, it is not a loan. It's a gift. It's money we're sending them. You know that, and I know that. A, 3 points. One, president can forgive 50% of it immediately after November. Trump wouldn't do it, but Biden would. Two, the president's mechanism is there by 2026 for giving it all. Three, what are we going to do if they don't pay? We're going to say we have to give them billions more to rebuild the country. You know that. I know that. Why lie about this? Well, that's what we do. All right, 855-839-1210. Is that too hard on Mike Johnson? And where is President Trump on this? I know he's in court today. I told you at the top of the show what he said, which was not supporting Johnson, but wasn't using his power to say, no, this is unacceptable, meaning if we don't get what we want on the border, you're not getting what you want on Ukraine, one border, the other border. Isn't that the deal? Even that, I don't think is a great deal, but it's something versus what we're getting out of this. Why isn't Mike Johnson asked? Come on, Speaker, you know the Senate is not going to pass this. Where's any indicator you have that they would pass the border bill? What are we getting out of this? 855-839-1210. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Senator Representative Charity Grimm Krupa, who is leading the charge to do something that you think would be common sense, rein in the Democrats. It's budget season. We still have fugitive from justice. I think we can call him that. Philadelphia Inquirer is no longer interested. Kevin Boyle. Are the police checking the bars? How many bars could there be out there? And yet he's incommunicado somehow or another, or they're registering his vote to spend whatever you want, do whatever you want. My God. And how's the roof in Harrisburg? Is it leaking again? We might be coming into rainy season.
Yeah, somehow a fugitive can vote, but they were all held out by a leaky roof.
Leaky roof.
Fascinating.
Let's give them a tent. The representative is next, and your calls. I'm serious on Mike Johnson. Stop it already. It is not alone. Come on now. Be honest with the American public. I realize you're a politician, too. Everybody's got to hedge a little bit, but come on now. Even for Democrats, these progressives in Harrisburg really, really are difficult. There was the roof. They couldn't vote now for months. Couldn't fix the roof. Remember that? Now we have a guy who's a...
We have like 20 roofers and one really good one named Earl that we could have sent out there.
Send Kevin Boyle up there. He can be fixing the roof. He's getting paid. Who's on the run or sitting in a bar somewhere, but they know how he votes. Because you have to understand, the big budget stuff is coming up and how tight this is. Well, Representative Charity Grimm Krupa joins us. She's one of the people trying to rein this in. Representative, good Friday. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where's your district, Representative?
I am the 51st district. I am Southern Fayette County, which is about 50 miles beneath Pittsburgh. I live about 5 minutes from the West Virginia border.
Wow. Okay. Well, there I would think things are a little bit calmer than what you've heard the politics here in Philadelphia. And Kevin Boyle fits right in. Does this raise an eyebrow in Harrisburg? Then we'll talk about what you're trying to do about it, that the guy is listed as a fugitive, and yet the voting was going on or continues to go on.
It's absolutely insane. So I'm an idealist, so I'm constantly disappointed in life. And, you know, so I'm a freshman in the House. I come from a judicial background. And I have to say, I have a newfound respect for the court system because, you know, there are procedures, there are, you know, to get up in a courtroom and talk about an expert matter, you actually have to be an expert. And that's not how it is in the House. It's just a lot of grandstanding and BS.
Yeah.
But it's totally insane that he was allowed to remote vote or is and continues to be allowed to remote vote when he is a fugitive from the law.
Can I ask then, you know, because it's a point of clarity here to your point. I'm only a dropout lawyer on the air, but is he in contact with people and telling them the vote? Because then they would be aiding and abetting a fugitive, I think.
Absolutely. And so what the rumor mill is that, no, they're not in contact. But that makes it even more alarming that he's permitted to vote. But I think that is a good question. If he is in contact, are they harboring him? I think that they're more exploiting him. I think that they could care less about his, and when I say they, I mean his political party in Harrisburg. They're using him to maintain their constitutional majority, and I think that they couldn't care less about the crisis that he personally is going through. And I want to be clear, I wish him the best. I hope whatever issues he's having, that he gets back on track and gets the treatment that he needs. But let's face it, if you were somebody with an active bench warrant for you, you're not going to go to the polls and vote in an election. If you do, you run the risk that the constable is going to lock you up and take you into custody. Why should a member that we should be holding our politicians to a higher standard? And my proposed resolution would change the rules. So it doesn't matter what political party you are. If there's an active warrant for your arrest, or you are incarcerated. And that's just insane to me that we have to even have a rule for that. Under those two circumstances, you are not allowed to remote vote.
Yeah, you would think so. Here's the other point, too. It's the sensitivity of this. We know about this here in Philadelphia. It's something Democrats on paper you'd think would be even more supportive. It's a protection from abuse order with his wife.
Yes.
It's not
yes.
like he owes parking tickets and he went over a line and now they're going after him on that. It's a female, his wife, and this has happened. We happen to know the first arrest and stuff that happened here. Then there was an incident with two female bartenders who are just trying to make a living. And he was saying really crazy stuff about all kinds of conspiracies and all as they were trying to get him to leave a bar.
And I saw those video clips. And my question is why was he not charged criminally with official oppression? He is a member of the state house, and he made threats that he was going to shut them down.
Yes.
And it was just swept under the rug. Nothing, to my understanding, and I didn't follow it closely, but there were no criminal or ethical charges. And I guess there could have been ethical charges that we may not necessarily know about if there's an investigation. But at a minimum, he violated his ethical duties and the threats that he made to those constituents in that bar.
Dan, you had a question, my producer representative.
Just curious. So if they are, I don't know, if they're not in communication with a fugitive, the next only other option, in my opinion, would be they're assuming the guy's vote. That would also be illegal, would it not?
Well, I mean, so pursuant to the House rules, you can fill out a form basically that, that you're allowing your vote to be cast in your absence. And I know that our whip, if you're not going to be there, we leave clear instructions. And I've never missed a vote. That's, something that's very important to me. But there are times, a member is going to have a baby or the spouse is going to have a baby. I mean, that's just the first example that popped in my head. There are times that you can, be paying attention, watching remotely to the arguments and still cast your vote. But clearly that's not what's happening here. And I think, on one level, knowing what I do about the judicial process, he turns himself in. They have constitutionally, they're required to set bail. So this could all be a moot issue if he would just go and face the warrant, that's been issued for him.
Yeah, exactly. Media coverage around the state here in Philadelphia, the Inquirer, of course, is in the tank. I think if there were not such a close vote, you would see more. We all know there'd be more pushback on this, even though he's a Democrat and political family and all. But the fact that this is the budget season and how close the voting could be on these things, the media basically now is not covering it.
And that's offensive. That's offensive. And I think that, I think that's why this rule is so important, too, because it takes the politics out of it. It shouldn't matter it shouldn't matter if you're the opposition party or the same party. If you're under these circumstances, you shouldn't be allowed to remote vote. And I mean, when you follow a moral and ethical code, you do the right thing. Regardless of those, I guess I'm saying I'm one of those people that the ends does not justify the means. Do the right thing, and this is not the right thing.
Well, I'm very glad you landed in Harrisburg. I hope you can, from what we know, spend some time there trying to change things. Because as a freshman, being on this, I think that's great. That it's not just how things go there. So, Representative, for our listeners, what's going on now where there might be a major vote? Is it just the back and forth over issues of the budget?
Yeah, so we're going into budget season. I was a little appalled last year coming in. When we got closer to that budget deadline, I thought, okay, we're going to roll up our sleeves. We're going to get this done. And I saw the budget deadline, come and go. And, I think that, if I were Speaker of the House, I'd say, hey, we're not leaving until this is done. And if they would do that, then I think that you would see things get done in a timely fashion. So the budget's always looming. I've seen, and nothing right now good. And well, I shouldn't say that because, I mean, particularly I'm on Veteran Affairs Veteran Affairs and Emergency Response. And that is one example of where there's good bipartisan support. How can you not support our veterans and our first responders? So there is some good stuff coming out of the House right now. But generally speaking, there is so much, anti-Second Amendment, anti-free speech stuff coming out that I really feel like, that I'm more there to be on the defensive, particularly of my love of the Constitution. So I'm a small town lawyer, but a part of my practice was constitutional and civil rights. First Amendment retaliation, false arrest, unlawful search and seizure. So I have a background and a love of the Constitution that I understand it. So I'm one of the, and that's another thing that's kind of appalling, you know, that you have the body of the House, you know, the members get to decide on constitutional issues. And there are a lot of brilliant people in Harrisburg. There are people there that I would not trust to babysit my cows. So I'm a farm girl too. So,
well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Representative. I usually say walk the dog here in Philadelphia. That gets me in trouble. You say babysit my cow. Yeah, that might be an even easier thing. Hey, thank you.
Exactly.
Please keep us in your loop. Let my producer know as things develop. We'd love to talk with you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, thank you. Dan, we have breaking news here.
Yeah,
apparently,
this is crazy dumb.
A fire breaks out near the Trump trial courthouse, but apparently Fox reporting...
I do have the Fox report if you want
Here's the Fox report. We're reporting that a person has set themselves on fire. What's here?
Happened and is happening now.
Yes, terrible, tragic news to tell you about. The moment the jury was picked, a man 30 feet away from me, I'm looking at it now, set himself on fire, self-immolated. The flames were 20 feet in the air. It took a few moments for police to come. I'm looking at his body right now. This man is sitting on the collect pond area. This is a small park across the street from the courthouse. He is sitting up. He is moving his arm. He totally set himself on fire. I can't see in any way how any human being can survive this. The police came to throw a blanket on him. There was a panic and screaming, obviously, when this happened. It happened while we were live on the air as I was given the news that a jury has been seated now here. We have more police and more fire, and you, of course, have the sense of the smoke. I apologize. More sense of this total tragedy. EMT paramedics are now tending to this man. He is moving his arms, so he is alive. He is his body is gray and white. His clothes are white. He is moving his arms, and scattered about him are lots of papers, colored papers, which obviously are some type of perhaps protest papers that he has. He is lying on the ground, moving his arms. The police and the paramedics are attending to him at the moment. A heartbreaking, heart-rending tragedy that this unidentified man set himself on fire in the protest area when the jury was announced that a jury was seated. We do not know his political views at the moment. We don't know anything about him. That is all I can tell you at the moment. The police and the ambulance.
All right. So you know how this will play out with the media. I can't tell based on that. That the jury was finally picked. I mean, I have a gut instinct which way this guy would lean, but I have a policy, and the media ought to follow this. Never somebody that's willing to set themselves on fire. Let's not be piecing out any coherence in a statement or anything else they do. You know what I mean? I try to do that on either side. Once that happens, you're just playing ideology if you try to say, oh, that shows what the Trump people are about, as the media might tend to do here. We'll give you more details as this develops. That when the jury was announced, that they do have now the alternates and the jury opening statements on Monday.
Winter is coming. Our city's down with a flattened, like a single sculpture.
Ah! Someone snitched!
You want me? Earn me!
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I'm in a dream.
That's right, Dolores. You're in a dream.
I am the one who knocks.
And now, Neil Zorin with What's on TV.
All right, every couple of weeks, Neil Zorin, our TV guy, gives us some good things to see on TV, but it can also handle a discussion of what TV should do when we have a situation like this fire breaking out by a guy setting himself on fire. Watched a little bit during the break. My rule is, you know, let's not go with the manifestos of people showing anything, but that's exactly what the media wants to do with this. Let's go to Neil Zorin. Hey, Neil, welcome in. Nice. I guess anytime we talk about it, obviously the biggest TV moment, should they have shown it, what they did was Bud Dwyer taking the gun out of the vanilla envelope.
Absolutely.
But what do you say as a guy who then critiques and breaks his stuff down? This is when we really learn about a station, local stations, particularly when one of them does something and the others don't, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
about like Channel 6 showed Budweiser,
yeah,
the others didn't.
Yeah, about judgment on this. And again, it's the analysis of the aftermath. A guy setting himself on fire is crazy, is disturbed. We shouldn't go by what the rationale are that it tells us anything about Trump or not Trump.
It doesn't tell you anything about Trump. I mean, if you know where the man stands, and then if it ever comes out, if the pamphlets around him, the red papers that the reporter talked about, say anything, it is an overreaction to anything. And it is obviously somebody's personal neurosis or somebody's personal psychosis. You pick the psychological disease you want. Obviously, the Dwyer thing, it was important. Obviously, probably second only to Jack Ruby shooting Lee Harvey Oswald in 1963. But Dwyer is more local and more current. I think it's news. I think you show it.
Well, and with Ruby,
to turn away, there's buttons to turn away from. There's rooms you can walk out of. And I think it's news. You show it. You don't have to analyze it. Somebody set himself on fire. Who does this? I mean, what is he, a Buddhist monk in Vietnam?
Right.
I mean, it's just, and I'm not belittling that, but, you know, how far do protests go? And what does setting on fire do to him? What good does it do?
And Neil, when you mentioned that point about Ruby, I'd show that over and over and over again. What I'm trying to do is to stop the conspiracy nuts out there. So if you don't show it after a period of time, they're going to glom on to that. But I predict over the weekend, the usual suspects, if they can find any kind of tag, you know what the thing is going to be. Look at what Trump has done to America. People are setting themselves on fire now.
Well, no, but first of all, Donald Trump didn't ask him to set anybody on fire. And that somebody did that as his own volition. So that is not important. What is important, I think, is that the press who is belittling Donald Trump can't live without Donald Trump. No talk show host comedian over the last 4 years has ever had a show without mentioning Donald Trump. He is their fodder. He is their story. I mean, what he is doing in New York right now while this trial is taking place, you think his campaign is interrupted. It's not interrupted. He's getting the best publicity he can. He's going up to Harlem and commuting with people. He's getting in touch with the city again. And this can't help or hurt him, because it's just literally somebody who's deranged doing something for whatever reason that will have no effect on anything.
I mean, Neil, I wish we could all come together on both sides. And I've said this, and I'm glad to hear you echo it, that when these happened, we're not going to try to get into every comma of these people. Sadly, they are deranged. Neil, one other area, and then we'll ask you, you know, something good to see on TV this weekend after all this.
This is more important about television. This is what television does. So this
is good. the Kevin Boyle story. Now the media disinterested. Mm-hmm. We're fascinated. It's a guy who's a fugitive from justice, and yet they're still counting his vote. We just had somebody on in Harrisburg.
Well, he still is a bona fide representative of his district. So I think he's entitled to vote until he is voted out or convicted of something. But the point is, if he is a legislator, and his job is to create the law, and he has allegedly broken the law, then I think it's his place. If you ever watch Perry Mason tells you to turn yourself in and tell the truth. There are the two messages. So nobody should be above the law, especially somebody who is not only a state representative, but is the brother of a U.S. congressman. So somewhere along the line, decency has to be done.
Yeah. Neil, best thing out there that you can tell us we can be watching, because I'm flat out of stuff at this point.
I have my binger for the weekend. I'm into three episodes of it. I can't take my eyes off of Ripley.
Okay.
This is a great
Dan,
year for
do you
Andrew
concur?
Scott.
No, you haven't seen it?
I have not seen Ripley yet. It's definitely something I wanted to check out, though.
Okay. All right.
Andrew Scott is having the year of his life. He just was in All of Us Strangers. If you go to the Ambler Theater this weekend, you can see him do a one-man Uncle Vanya, one-man Chekhov. And now he's doing this, and he is such a great Ripley, because unlike Matt Damon, who was charming and who could insinuate himself, and this is somebody who has no personality but adopts the personality and adapts to situations. Such an amazing performance, and it's so involving. And not to mention that I who love Amalfi, first everything takes place. I mean, they said it's in Altrani, which is the town next to Amalfi. And if I ever win the lottery, I'll be living in Amalfi. So it's
all right. It's, well, Neil, until a couple weeks from Ripley. Today, where do we find Neil Zorin?
You find me watching Ripley. You find me in the Delaware County Daily Times and related newspapers at neilspaper.com. And probably still watching Under the Bridge, even though I think I'm tired of it already.
All right, Neil.
But Lily Gladstone gives a good performance. I'm glad to see she can really act somewhere.
I'll take a look at Ripley. We'll talk again soon. Neil Zorin with us, big 2 o'clock hour, Dom's Money Melody. We'll give you more on what's happening in New York.
Dom Giordano, weekdays noon till 3, from Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.